And welcome back to Fully Equipped, your gear-focused podcast where we take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Jonathan Wall, I'm managing editor for gear at golf.com, joined as always by Andrew Tursky, senior equipment editor for golf.com as well. Tursky, what's going on, man?
Reporting live from the American Express, baby.
That's right. I'll say Mr. Palm Springs here.
Yeah.
But back on the road this week for Tursky, a whole lot going on that we're going to get into in this week's tour report. But before we get into that, if you missed last week's episode, you missed some big news. The professor, Mr. Tim Breon himself, has moved on to a new job. TBD, we can't announce it just yet. We're going to let Tim do that in a future podcast. But sad to see him go. But as I mentioned, we are hoping to get some new voices on the podcast to fill Tim's big shoes. And we went to the TruSpec Brain Trust. And, it's funny. Tim always told me that there was one guy that he really respected, and I'm not going to say more than anybody else there, but one that he really respected a whole lot. That is Chris McCormick. He is TruSpec's VP of Tour and Education, and he's actually going to be joining us today on the podcast. Chris, what's going on, man?
How we doing, guys? Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We're excited to get your fitting insights. And as we mentioned, you're VP of Tour as well. So you're going to be kind of doing what Tim was with TruSpec Tour, working with the Tour pros who are going to be in the stable for TruSpec Tour. But as I mentioned, a lot going on this week, and want to get to Tursky because I know he's actually out on the golf course and he's trying to kind of get some more intel on a big story we want to get into just a little bit. But Tursky, I'll let you take it from here, man. What is going on this week in Palm Springs? What's kind of caught your eye?
So I've been kind of running around this place trying to get some photos with Corona. You can't necessarily get inside the ropes. We can't do our job the way we could last year or in times of past, but being safe. So going out on the course, and we're chasing down Ricky Fowler is making a big iron shaft switch. He's going back into the Rev 33s. Obviously, he was kind of messing around with those amp cells from 6 years ago. I think that was more of a shaft thing. So now that he's found the right shaft, which is the Mitsubishi MMT 125 TX taper shaft. Now, I'm happy that we have Chris on to talk about this. what do you know about this shaft, and what have you seen from people that have been fitting into them?
It's graphite. So, let's just point that out first before Chris goes into it. This is a graphite shaft that Fowler's
mixed
using.
Mixed mesh technology.
Yeah, so it's different. But yeah, what have you seen from this kind of technology, Chris?
So, I mean, as you guys know, AeroTech has been along those same kind of pathways for years, and other companies have been relatively slow to catch up, incorporating that multi-material construction, bringing in the benefits of steel, the structural integrity that we get out of a traditional steel shaft, and still taking some of those other player benefits from the composites. So when Mitsubishi launched this new MMT line relatively recently, we've seen some better players start to incorporate that type of shaft technology into their irons. It's a heavier weight shaft that still gives them the feel of what they're used to in the steel shaft, but we're starting to see a little bit more consistency and playability out of that MMT multi-material construction than just a traditional steel shaft.
Yeah, this is a really cool tech for those that don't know kind of the story behind the metal mesh technology for this shaft that Fowler has in his irons. It's actually made up of individually braided strands of 304 stainless steel. So it's meant to perform like a steel shaft. That tends to be the one sticking point for a lot of golfers that I talk to, and even tour pros that we see, is just getting away from something that they know, the steel products that they know, and a lot of guys will play True Temper, Dynamic Gold. But this is kind of that way of getting the benefits of graphite with a lot of the same feel and performance of a steel shaft. And one of the benefits that I've always heard about, and Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but for golfers, especially those that maybe have, tennis elbow, practice a whole lot, you know, playing with graphite shafts can actually help because you get rid of a lot of those unwanted vibrations that come up the shafts that tend to kind of wear your body down a little bit more during the course of a round or on the range.
No, that's exactly right.
And not just that, I was talking to both Ben Shulman from Cobra and Zane, the Mitsubishi rep, and they were both saying that he's really tightening that dispersion compared to steel shafts and other shafts he was testing, which is surprising when, you know, you say it's graphite, but really it's that metal mesh. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. And, you know, him using a 125 weight, you know, we all grew up playing 120 gram steel shafts. So it's that kind of that timing device that we're used to, and being able to get that weight with the graphite shaft has been big for him.
Yeah. It's certainly a story to watch because, you know, we've seen players over the years try out graphite. I remember a few years back, there were actually, it was like back-to-back weeks. It was Boo Weekly and somebody else won the week after Boo Weekly, and it was back-to-back wins for graphite iron shafts, which I think is almost unheard of. We've seen Bryson obviously using graphite in all of his clubs. Abe Anser, another player who uses the MMT in his iron. So it's certainly something that we're starting to see some of the players in the upper end of the world rankings use. You know, if a guy like Fowler goes out and wins with the shaft, it's funny. We've talked about this before. All it takes is one big name winning, and guys will start to get curious about a product. So certainly a story to watch. But another story to watch this week, Tursky. Is Bruce,
we're about
is
to start
Bruce
the
Koepka?
Rumor,
I know, but the rumor is that Brooks Koepka is changing irons this week. What's the story here, or what do you know?
So I saw him yesterday with both the previous Mizunos, the JPX 921 Tours. He had those in the bag, but he also had Strixon ZX7s in the bag, which is a little bit different.
Ooh,
and today he shows up different to the course with just the Strixons in the bag. So we'll see. He is a free agent. He doesn't have a contract deal with either Strixon or Mizuno, so he's kind of free to just make that decision come Thursday. So we'll find out. But Chris, what have you seen from the Strixon ZX7s, if anything? I'm curious to know, like, kind of the differences between those and the 921 Tours.
As most people know, or maybe they don't, Strixon forged by Endo. So really good quality forging, and the consistency head to head is really, really tight. So you see some really good ball speeds, great manager of spin, checks all the boxes for look good, sound good, feel good. And Strixon, the last several generations have actually been really solid, and it's kind of a sleeper club compared to the price points of some of the other high end forgings that are out there. You get a lot of golf club for the money there, and it's fantastic across the board.
These are super sleepers. I keep talking about the Strixon, the Z series stuff has been so good the last few years, especially. But just not a lot of talk about these irons, you know. Now Koepka's potentially using them. We won't know until he tees it up on Thursday, but certainly a story to watch. Some of the other ones, Tursky, I just wanted to kind of run down this week, and you actually got in hand of one of these, but world number 9, Tyrrell Hatton, just signed a multi-year extension with Ping. You know, we typically see a lot of the Ping guys, they don't like to go away from their stuff. They love, like, I wouldn't say a guy who signs with Ping is a Ping lifer, but you typically don't see those guys go away from it, especially when they're having success like Tyrrell has over the last couple of years. Tommy Fleetwood, official. He is now a TaylorMade staffer. We knew that he was. I mean, we saw he was on a Christmas card, for goodness sakes, with the rest of the TaylorMade staffers. But he signs a multi-year deal for the irons and the woods and the golf ball. I've heard that he's also working on the wedges and the putter right now. Saw photos, which we posted up on our social media page at Fully Equipped Golf on Instagram, and we're at Fully_Equipped on Twitter. Rory has new gear in the bag, new TaylorMade Sim products in the woods. Pretty traditional setup for Rory. I know he used the hybrid, at least in this photo. Driver 3.5 in the Sim 2. But the driver, it looks like he's going with the Fujikura Ventus black shaft. So we actually posted photos over the last couple of months of him testing with that product. So no surprise there. Another one I do want to point out, Jim Furyk went to a 47-inch driver shaft, guys, in his Callaway driver. And I went and looked back from his previous tour start to the one that he just had last week, picked up 7 yards. And oh, by the way, he was still third on tour for that week in driving accuracy. So, you know, we have seen some guys adding the 47, 46 and a half inch shafts. And it looks like we're kind of getting to that point again where, you know, we're seeing some guys that are trying to add some more distance, and Furyk being one of them. So those are some of the other kind of quick hitters as far as tour news. But, you know, Chris, and it looks like we lost Mr. Tursky. I know his Wi-Fi was a little bit sketchy out there. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to have you on today to talk about, you know, this is launch season. You know, we're seeing brand new products released every single week. Last week, it was the Callaway, the Epic line for their woods. This week, it's TaylorMade in their Sim 2. And, you know, let's be honest. When recreational golfers go to their local golf shop, what's the one club they're gravitating towards?
It's the driver. Everybody's looking for that magic wand off the tee. 100%.
For sure. And, you know, but it brings up a good question that I wanted to get your take on, which is one that Tursky and I get all the time. You know, these new drivers come out and they have new colors and new tech and a lot of marketing jargon that's supposed to kind of get people excited. But what's the real timeline here? If you're looking to get a new driver, how often should you realistically be looking for one? Because it doesn't feel like it's, you know, sure, there is some groundbreaking tech. We look at Titleist with their TSI and the ATI face. I mean, that seems like a groundbreaking tech for them after kind of what they've had over the last few years. But how often should golfers really be looking at, you know, should I be getting fit for a new driver? Should I even be testing a new driver? What's kind of your take on that?
It's a great question, and a question that we get a lot of. It's, you see the majority of the tour players that are always moving into that newest, latest, and greatest tech. But when it comes to most of us in the amateur world, what I will typically recommend to my clients and to my players is when these companies come out with new tech, it's about every 3 to 4 years, they're coming up with something that really benefits the average golfer. Now, that doesn't mean that the new tech isn't worth testing. As it's not a linear timeline that, oh, I have to get a new driver every 3 years. I have to get a new driver every 4 years because it's going to be definitively better. It's always worth testing the new product every year just to see what's out there. But for most of us, the big improvements that these companies come up with, about a 3-year timeline or so.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I see. But as we mentioned, you know, it's important if you're going to go test this stuff, go get fit. I mean, I think it's important to at least, if you're not going to put something new in the bag, go get fit. Maybe go get fit once a year. I mean, it's something that you can at least kind of establish a baseline, see if your gear is still in a really good spot. Maybe there's something new out there that's worth considering slotting in the bag. But yeah, I mean, unless you're a guy with deep pockets, you probably don't need to be buying a new driver, but it's still worth kicking the tires on the new stuff just to see, you know, is it good enough to throw in the bag? Speaking of Sim 2, we got Tursky back. Hey, what did you think of the Sim 2 product?
Sorry about that. My internet's just been super in and out.
Uh-huh. You
know, is what it is.
I know.
life on the road. So yeah, me and DJ Lance from TrueSpec, we hit the Sim 2 and the Sim 2 Max products. Honestly, super forgiving, super soft off the face. I actually wasn't like the biggest fan of the original Sim, but the Sim 2 is just softer and a bit more forgiving. And it's got that fade bias compared to pretty much everything else on the market. Chris, would you say that the Sim 2 or the original Sim are fade biased for most everyone? Or, I mean, I know they have a draw version, but what have you found from the Sim drivers?
So the majority of the people that hit the sim product, Twist Face by its design is going to be a little bit more fade bias from what we've done in our independent testing. So if we have somebody that is struggling with that left miss, that's our go-to club immediately. So our better players, our faster players, we are usually landing on a sim product specifically for that demographic of player.
Well, I suffer from a hook, so I don't know what I'm doing not playing a sim product. I guess I'm an idiot. I don't know.
So I'd say it's probably your club, man.
Sim 2, it's time.
It might be. This year might be the year to get back into a TaylorMade product for sure.
I mean, look, I with the Titleist product, you know, I hadn't played a Titleist driver in a while, and you know, right now I'm gaming the TSI product. So it's been a very good one, and you know, sometimes you come back to it eventually. It comes full circle. But for those that
you
haven't,
said you're in the TSI driver?
Yeah, TSI.
I just wanted to say, while we're on the TSI topic, Titleist does have new TSI 2, TSI 3 hybrids out this week.
There we go.
I don't really know much about them, but I have seen them in person. And the TSI 3, for me, you know, I'm more of a driving iron type guy, but it suits my eye pretty well. It looks like that thing isn't going to go super far left, but we'll see. We'll see what the players are saying.
Yeah, it's got a very iron-like look to it compared to the TSI 2. I think for a lot of tour pros, I could see that TSI 3 being a really popular product out there on tour. You know, and just kind of to go back to Sim 2 for a minute, you know, we've been getting questions about what are some of the differences. You know, some of the ones that I've kind of noticed, bigger face seems to be a new thing for the Sim 2 product. Slightly higher launch is what I've been noticing from some of the testing that I've done. But you know, it seems to be just kind of, you know, I know golfers hate when we say this, but it seems to be just, you know, incremental improvements over the previous one. I don't really see anything that stands out as being worse than the previous version. I think the larger face to me is something that, you know, I don't hit the center all the time. That's something that's going to instill some more confidence, especially if you're one of those guys that needs to see that big face. Continuing in the drivers, guys, you know, one of these sort of under the radar changes, and I'm going to say it's going to happen because he's been testing driver shafts, but Justin Thomas has been trying to work his way into Titleist's new TSI 3 driver. Tursky and I talked about it last week. He was using a TSI 3 with a Fujikura Ventus Red, which is the higher launching shaft. It looks like this week, at least from the photos that I saw, he's doing some shaft testing with a graphite design ADIZ, which is a shaft that's been really popular out on tour. We've seen Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth used ADIZ for a little bit. So it's certainly something that we have seen other tour pros, some of the notable guys using. But it kind of brings up a topic that I want Chris to touch on, which is, I mean, sure, there are exceptions to every rule to this, and I'll use Dustin Johnson before I get into this as the exception to the rule. You know, you can, you know, DJ's been using the same speeder 661 shaft for going back to college, and for him, he's been able to use that shaft in every single TaylorMade head that he's ever used since he joined their staff. But I think if we look at, you know, Justin Thomas, you know, sometimes when you are switching into drivers, you can't just assume that your gamer shaft is going to fit ahead. Even if you're going from a TaylorMade driver to a TaylorMade driver, you're going to need to make sure that you do some additional testing. Don't just buy the head from, you know, eBay or you know, a local golf store and throw it in there. You're going to need to do testing, Chris. I mean, I think that's one of those things that, again, going to get fit and not just assuming, kind of like JT's doing right now. You know, he's not using the same shaft that he had in his TS head. He's having to kind of work his way through different models to get there.
Oh, absolutely. The aerodynamics of the head, the weight distribution, whether there's going to be repositioned weight towards the toe, towards the heel, going to influence how that shaft reacts, how it deflects, you know, different head weights even. And I mean, if we go back to that Sim 2, we were talking about the changes. Biggest change in that head, no more movable weight. So going from Sim to Sim 2, they got rid of that weight track. It's a fixed weight port now. So if you're a player that has that weight thrown all the way out on the toe and shaft is reacting in a particular way, now you take that same shaft and go into sim two, where that weight's not repositioned out towards the toe, might get a little different feel, a little different reaction. So if you're making a head change, absolutely worth testing some shafts while you're at it. Don't just make the assumption that, hey, this is going to work just because it's worked in the past.
I did talk to JJ from Titleist about JT's, his driver shaft, his testing. He's been testing basically everything on the market. And I guess he settled on that Ventus Red last week because he really liked the butt stiffness. You know, he's got like a quick little transition, so that butt stiffness helped him out. And it is still a low torque product. And basically he was just saying that he's picked up so much speed with the TSI 3 head that it's just time to find a different driver shaft. And so he's testing pretty much everything on the market, and we'll just kind of see where he settles. But he was like, listen, just because JT didn't do that throughout his career doesn't mean every other golfer out here isn't doing what he's doing right now. So he's just putting it through the paces.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, Justin Thomas is one of the biggest names in the sport. So when he's testing driver shafts, we notice. But Tursky, as you mentioned, you know, this is not something new. This happens all the time out on tour. Guys are constantly testing new driver shafts, especially when they're switching heads. I'm not surprised. Let's just put it that way. I'm not surprised that he's testing everything under the sun. You know, you got to try and find it. He hasn't found it yet, and he'll keep looking, but he's gonna get there. He's gonna find something. And it's not the red, it's not his previous shaft that he had, the Mitsubishi product. And you know, we'll see if the graphic design hits this week, but he's certainly kind of working through it and grinding right now.
If he's anything like DJ, he's gonna test all these shafts and then come back to the one he was using previously
and go back
anyway.
yeah All right, so in lieu of a mailbag this week, I thought it'd be fun to kind of do some rapid fire questions with Chris and just kind of get some of his insights from a fitting perspective. You know, Tim offered so many, but not everybody has the same insights, and I always think it's fun to kind of get their take. So, Chris, let's get into it rapid fire. If you're a golfer on a budget, what's the one club in the bag that's worth getting fit for?
Putter. 100% putter.
Why?
If you want lower score, it's so for most of us, it's the only club you're going to go and use every single hole. You hit driver a max of 14 times. So, but everybody gravitates to that big stick. They want to get the distance. But at the end of the day, driver's not the club getting the ball in the hole for you. So if you're going to get fit for one and you're on a budget, get fit for that putter.
Well, it kind of segues perfectly into my second question, which is, you know, we've had a lot of tour pros and tour reps on the pod who have all said, and I shouldn't say all, but a lot of them have said, you know, when you're kind of working your way into trying to find the right ball for your game, the best way to kind of go through the fitting process, this is to start from around the green and work your way back. You know, start with the putter, start with the wedges. Do you subscribe to that same school of thought?
100%. Every good quality tour caliber ball is going to respond off the tee. It's going to respond on that full swing. Launch window might be a little different, but where they really start to separate themselves is when the player has confidence and feel and control around the greens, even with the putter. So putter, chips, pitches, bunker play, those approach shots into the green, what can you hit and stop when you need it to? And control with a golf ball around the green is huge. And that's where they really start to separate themselves. 100%.
It still amazes me that recreational golfers don't think about fitting that way. It's always the reverse, always starting with the driver and kind of working your way into the irons. Because if you think about it, what are you spending your most time doing during the course of a round? You're putting and you're hitting shots from around the green. So I think it makes total sense that you want to have the best short game you can, because your long game's not always going to be on. But if you've got a semi-strong short game, it's going to be able to save you shots around the golf course. I've heard from high handicap golfers, particularly those who have just started, say that it's not worth the money to get fit. Where do you stand on a relative newcomer, somebody who's shooting over 100 regularly, getting fit? Are they better off improving their game before coming to see you, or should they just come right away?
That's, I mean, I've been answering that question basically the same way for the last 15 plus years. And I mean, I always answer that question with a question. If you are a 120 shooter and you have a 100-yard slice and you come to see me and all of a sudden, without making any swing improvements, that 100-yard slice turns into a 40-yard slice, making the exact same swing, are you going to play better golf? Most people would say, well, yeah, that's at least still in play most places. So with that being the case, I can take a player that, as long as they can get it airborne and forward, I can make them play better golf just by fitting for how their body naturally wants to move. So it's definitely beneficial for anybody to come get fit. And you look at those players that, oh, I only hit my drive 210 yards. Okay, then there's not really a reason for you to have a 14 club set in your bag. We might figure out that 8 clubs gives you all the distance gaps that you need. 10 clubs might give you all the distance gaps you need. Makes the game more fun, makes it more simple to navigate through your bag.
Yeah, well said. What to you, what makes more of a difference, the club head or the shaft?
Head is going to be primarily the biggest influencer. Shaft becomes more fine-tuning tool. They're both equally important because obviously the shaft is the only connection point you have with the club, but the head is going to be the biggest influencer on dramatic performance changes. So if I had to assign importance, head for sure.
Head. Last question for you. Give me 3 questions a golfer should be asking their fitter before going through a fitting to confirm that that fitter is the guy they should be working with.
So 3 questions, I mean, basic questions that a reputable fitting organization or company should have is, number one, ask, do they have a launch monitor? It never ceases to amaze me that, yeah, I got fit. Okay, TrackMan, Foresight, Flight Scope, something, and oh no, it was just out on the range with a lie board. I'm going, oh, got it. Okay. So number one, do they have a launch monitor? Number two, how many brands do they have available? So if you're going to see somebody for a fitting and they have, you know, 2 brands, 3 brands to choose from, you're kind of leaving stuff out on the table there. There's so many good golf clubs out there. And just because you end up in a Ping driver doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have Ping fairway woods. Oh, I always tell my guys, ask how many products are available to test if you're going to go get fit. So number 3, I would say same question for shaft availability. Now there's guys out there that are moving that driver 110 plus miles an hour, and they might only have 2 shafts to choose from. And if neither of those work, then we have to start over somewhere else.
Yeah. It's all great insight. And I'm excited, Chris, to be able to keep having you on the pod going forward. To keep offering your fitting insights, especially now that you're gonna be working with the guys out on tour with the TruSpec Tour Department. Looking forward to getting to see you out on tour. I know Tursky is as well. And with that, let's get into this week's interview. Tursky, I'll let you intro this one. Who do we have this week?
First of all, I just want to shout out the producer, Mark. I know it's a little loud around here. He put mute on my Zoom. I know, a little loud. I'm sorry.
I love it. Thank you, Mark.
But yeah, huge thanks to Callaway for letting us interview Francesco Molinari, friend of the program. Actually, he's a repeat guest.
Yes,
we talked about all sorts.
Program, I like it.
All sorts of stuff actually regarding fitting. So kind of right up your alley, Chris. Everyone, please enjoy Francesco Molinari. Welcome back to Golf.com's Fully Equipped podcast. We were actually, you were on the podcast last year, this exact time. And actually, you haven't played very much golf on the PGA Tour since then. Kind of what's the update on your life and your golf game, and how's it feel to get back out here?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like I'm kind of coming back from a sabbatical, which is something I wasn't expecting, obviously, this time last year. But yeah, loads of things happened, obviously, since this time last year. So now I'm in a new family situation. You know, we moved over to the States, to California, and we're starting to get settled in our new life and new reality. So yeah, I've enjoyed the winter. Obviously, I played a little bit, played 3 events, you know, in the new season before Christmas last year. And I've tried to use the winter as a pre-season, you know, kind of training. And yeah, it's been nice, obviously, making the most of the California winter weather, playing a lot of golf. So looking forward to, I guess, the first season with, you know, the new setup.
Yeah, that's got to be way better for you, being in the States. Kind of cuts down travel, right?
Yeah, it's obviously easier in many ways. Traveling, absolutely a huge advantage, I think. And like I said, weather, you know, obviously it's hard to beat Southern California winter. So I've played a lot more golf than I was used to during the winter and the, you know, the kind of time off, which was probably needed after not playing for the most part of last year. So yeah, I think it's a situation that, you know, will bring advantages obviously for my career, that there was one of the reasons behind the move. And yeah, I can't wait to go out on Thursday and see where I'm at.
So we're here at the Callaway Epic. I don't know if you want to say it's a driver launch event, but it's, you guys are out here shooting commercials and doing all sorts of content. Have you done much testing with the new Epic Speed, Epic Max, Epic Max LS?
Yeah, I did some testing with the Epic Speed. I went early last week in Carlsbad to hit it for the first time. I'd seen images of it, but I hadn't hit it yet. And yeah, I mean, from what I can see so far, it seems like a great product. Very easy to transition from the Maverick. So for me, it was a case of, you know, same shafts, same specs. But we saw a definite increase in ball speed, which is always nice. I think there's a definite improvement in terms of sound and, you know, the noise it makes when you hit it. I like it a lot. It's quite different from the Maverick, but hard to describe, but it's, you know, it's really solid, and it's that kind of noise that makes you want to hit the ball even harder, which is, I think, great, obviously, for a driver. So yeah, very, very exciting. Hopefully go in the bag, you know, if not this week, as soon as possible. And definitely, I think, a good advancement from the Maverick last year.
When you're in the initial testing session, or maybe it's a practice session, you have TrackMan going, what are some of the numbers that you're really looking at?
I think in terms of testing, you know, a driver, like I said, I think you naturally start with the same setup, same shaft, you know, same spec, same everything, to see if there is any difference. And you look at TrackMan, you look at launch angle, spin rate, obviously a lot of things you can tell by the ball flight as well, but obviously TrackMan is always going to be more precise than your naked eye. But yeah, I would say the first two parameters you look at are probably launch and spin rate. We saw those were very similar. If anything, it was spinning a little bit less than my Maverick, the new Epic Speed. So, and like I said, with an increase of ball speed, so it was a great thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried any 48-inch drivers, 47, anything like that?
Last year when I came back in Houston, we experimented a little bit because I switched into the Ventus black shaft anyway, so we tried to go, I think, 46.5, but you know, it was just a couple of days before the Houston Open, and you know, it wasn't the right time for me to experiment too much on that. I guess it's you know, the trend right now. Everyone wants to get more ball speed and hit it as long as possible. I think I wasn't really, for most of the winter, I wasn't in a position, you know, to mess around too much with my game. My priority was just getting back into a good routine and playing golf and you know, getting back into a scoring mentality after such a long break. And that's why I only went last week to Carlsbad, because I wanted to, you know, get everything else in place before starting to testing. So there's going to be definitely more occasions this year to maybe experiment a little bit into a longer shaft.
I feel like you're not one to change equipment setups too much, but are there any other big changes that you've made in the last couple months?
No, I wouldn't say. Well, in terms of the, you know, the setup in the bag, I've put in a 5-wood and taken out an hybrid, just because I thought the gap between my 3-wood and the hybrid was a bit too big. So obviously the 5-wood helps in that sense. But no, the rest is pretty much the same. And again, like I was saying, you know, there's, I think, times in your career when you're, everything is great and you're firing on all cylinders, and then you can mess a bit more around with equipment and experiment a bit more. But for me, the last few weeks, the last few months, it was just, you know, getting back into it. So it was probably easier and more straightforward to do with equipment that I knew already.
Mm-hmm. I remember you kind of set the internet on fire with those custom Callaway irons that you had 2 years ago, where you brought them out at Bay Hill. Are those still the irons you have in the bag, or what do you have these days?
Yeah, they're back in the bag. I had a spell the last like quarter of 2019 I played with some cavity backs, and last year the few events that I played at the beginning of the year I played with the cavity backs, but then the blades went back in recently. I played them already at Houston and at the Masters. I'm trying to think, it seems like a long way away, but yeah, I'm pretty sure I played them in the end of last year. And yeah, I mean, I just love the feel of those and the flight I get, and I'm really happy to have them back in the bag.
So you were bouncing between blades, cavity backs, blades. I feel like you're a perfect person to answer this. Do you think too many amateurs play blades?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I love blades, and you get some advantages with blades. Otherwise, you know, no one would play them. But you need to be obviously a very good player. You need to be consistent. You need to strike the ball pretty much in the middle of the face, you know, most of the time. So, yeah, I would say definitely most amateurs, a good percentage, I don't want to say numbers, but probably 95-97% of amateurs at least are better suited to cavity backs. But I know that you know, blades are cool and they look great, and they are a great look, you know, to have in the bag.
See, that's the problem. If amateurs shouldn't play blades, they shouldn't make them look so good.
I know, and I understand, but you know, as long as you're happy with your decision and you know what you're in for, there's no issues. You know, in the end, it's a golf. Obviously, for amateurs, it's about enjoying the game. So if you enjoy hitting the blades, and I know when you flash a blade, the feel you get off of it is nothing like a good shot with a cavity back. So maybe that one good shot is worth a few misses off the club face.
Surely you play a lot of pro-ams. Are there any other mistakes that you see amateurs like commonly make?
I mean, you know, it's. I think that, yeah, you see other mistakes, but they all go back in the end to the fact that still a lot of people nowadays don't really get clubs fitted to themselves. So it can be, you know, a driver shaft that is too stiff, or maybe sometimes too soft, even though normally it's too stiff. You can see guys maybe that, you know, have a set that go up to a 3-iron and they don't use any hybrids, and you know, you see tour guys having, most of them having hybrids in the bag nowadays, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. But yeah, like I said, I think it's all mistakes that go back to the fact that, you know, they don't get a proper club fitting, and then it's just a bit random.
You're kind of the preaching to the choir on this podcast. We're always telling our listeners to get fit, so that's going to mean a lot coming from you.
That's a good advice, yeah, for sure.
Francesco, I know you got some commercials to shoot. I really appreciate you stopping by again.
Yeah, no problem. My
pleasure. Play well this week.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for episode 75 of Fully Equipped. Thanks again to Francesco Molinari for the time. If you're looking for more gear news, be sure to check us out, as always, on social media. We're @fully_equipped on Twitter and @fullyequippedgolf on Instagram. Thanks, as always, for listening. We'll see you around.